Great. Great. We usually start these calls out with GLO giving us a little rundown of what's happening in Washington, what's happening with the latest RFPs, and there may be some more people joining us as we go. And then we're fortunate today to have Paula Paris.
Melody Daniel.
Hi, Melody. Mike? Thanks for joining.
You're welcome.
Hello.
Do you want to give us a rundown on what's the latest in Washington?
Oh, well, the latest was just what Joe gave us when we were at the grantee meeting last week. They anticipate that the next RFP will be released in December with probably a March due date. Isn't that what he said, Mike? I think that's what it was.
Yes, it was delayed.
Yeah, he was thinking mid-December to early January is what he said the release date was. So, and then they are hoping that the new grantees for 2013 would be announced during the month of May. Other than that, not a whole lot. That's about the only update I have.
Well, there was a reason why it is delayed, and it's interesting. They're going to change the RFP this year, according to Joe, unless it's vetoed by someone higher up. But they would like to – the environmental technology area has gotten so big. In the last RFP, for example, you had to have mandatory training and at least an awareness training in about – 8 different areas, and they want to break it down into 2 types of training, 2 tracks, where one would be more, I think, awareness, and then the other would be specific tracks. For example, if you wanted to have a wastewater program, you could have a wastewater program, or you could have
Campbell,
a specific program. We haven't gotten the details on that yet, and it may change, and it's still really unofficial, but there seems like there's going to be a little bit of a change. The one thing that we were assured of, is there will be a program, and there is a tight budget, but this year, of course, they haven't settled last year's budget yet, so they kind of kicked the can down the road, and they've got the new budget is for 13 is a continuing resolution, so as of now, as much as anyone understands, the program goes ahead. Hopefully at current levels, maybe in increased levels if they could get some more sponsors. So there will be an RFP. It looks like it'll be a little different, basically the same in terms probably of community involvement and partnerships and leveraging everything, but it might be a little different in terms of the curriculum and training delivery. So we'll keep everyone informed as we go. Some people joined us while we were introducing. Perhaps they can let us know who they are.
Pam Caronchio, Energy Coordinating Agency.
Christine Campbell, Clover Park Technical College.
Elisa Mansbeiser, the Mount Washington Community Development Corporation.
Great.
Autumn Bryson, great. Zender Environmental.
Great. Okay. What we do in these series of conference calls, they're very informal. This series, we're looking at various grantees, people who have had grants, people who are just starting out grants. We had Hunter's Point to kick it off. They're brand new and just starting, forming from a community organization. They're ramping up their programs. Then we followed it with St. Nicholas, who is actually ramping down. St. Nicholas had about 5 different re-ups, competes and awards, and a very similar community to Hunter's Point, the same kind of community organization, decided to do something for their community, banded together and started this program quite a few years ago and then moved into the environmental arena, have been teaching environmental technology courses and placing people from the community in environmental jobs in the Brooklyn area. But now we're not funded anymore after a dozen years of training. And coping with the the whole idea of what happens when you lose funding or decide you don't want to have funding anymore. And this is an extremely important issue for those who are considering a program, those who are just starting off a program, and even those in the middle of their program. And we felt it was worthwhile to investigate this whole issue of where do you go next, and this whole process of starting up, ramping up, delivering your program, and then figuring out where to go from there. And often it's a quite different direction. And we found that the grantees have gone in a lot of different directions, and we'll probably be talking to some. Some have were not funded and then waited, kind of drifted for a couple of years and then reapplied and got a new grant. Others were able to attain state funding, and we'll be hearing from New Jersey Youth Corps. In their case, they were able to get into the state budget and basically have been fine. They're funding their program through state programs. Then there's other programs like the one in Milwaukee, and we'll probably hear from them. And they were continued, discontinued, and the people from that program, Chris Litzau, kind of moved across the street and started a new program, building on the work done by the original funder and starting a new program. And he was just awarded a grant, and he was at an annual conference. And so we're exploring these ideas of where you go and what you do once you get the funding. And today we're really fortunate to have Paula Paris from JFY Networks. It was originally called Jobs for Youth. Its director is Gary Kaplan. Gary has been around for a long, long time, as Paula has, been very successful. They've been one of the stars in the environmental training program. I think they started way before the EPA program started. I think they started in 1976, and we'll let Paula talk about that. But they were originally they were a community group, but very philanthropic. When Gary had not started yet, I visited him and asked him, "Gary, have you ever thought of applying for federal money?" He said, "We're philanthropic. We don't have federal money." So, and they didn't have federal money for a long time. And so, this is an interesting organization that started as a community group, 100% philanthropic funds, moved into federal programs. And were awarded competitively four different grants in 98. This is from EPA, 1998, 203, 206, and 210. And, of course, now their funding has ceased. They ended as St. Nicholas ended in September 30th. Their EPA funds stopped. And so we're going to talk to Paula about a little bit. Paula, tell us, maybe you could run through your demographic, the history of your organization and where you're going, and we can talk about how you're morphing.
Okay. So, well, thank you, and thank you for asking me to speak. It's kind of hectic here. We've been in the process of changing our business model, and we made a relatively painful decision last January, I think, to not reapply for another two-year cycle of EPA funds. So, in fact, yesterday I just got all my forms, my final forms from Las Vegas. So it's a little bittersweet because we love the people, we really love the program, we love the community. But in fact, we've been watching some trends, and one of the trends has been after stimulus money has been awarded. Job training funds from labor, which is one of the largest sources of training monies, have been trending towards community colleges and a search to define what certification is. So we've been always providing the industry certifications, but there has been a lot of discussion and movement toward, well, certification at the community college level. And we've seen some, you know, we've seen and heard from some wonderful community college programs across the country. It's not necessarily been the trend here in Massachusetts, except for the trend has been for the funding. So we've seen the community agency share of job training, of availability of funds for job training at the community level to have been shrinking over the past several years. So we have always also had an education side to our service delivery. And one of the lines of service that we have been building over the years has been digital or e-learning as a way of reaching more people and making this a little bit more efficient. So another trend, even though I said that the programs in Massachusetts are not quite as sophisticated, in my opinion, some ones may disagree, but as programs that we've seen in California and Chicago and other places, there are the science-based environmental technology programs for both public community colleges and a couple of private community colleges. And for the demographic that we serve, which are low-income high school graduates, people who in many cases have long-term unemployment issues, and also an increasing population of ex-offenders, there is a barrier to entry to community colleges, and that is the ACCUPLACER exam, which some states use ACCUPLACER, some use COMPASS. It's a lot of public colleges use it, but also some private colleges. And the science-based programs tend to have higher cut scores, but the bottom line here is that if you don't attain a certain score, you have to take a series of developmental classes for no credit, but you still have to pay for them. So the bigger picture here is that the throughput for community colleges in many places is low, and we have numbers and rates here that are embarrassingly low for a highly educated area, or what's perceived as a highly educated area of the country. So our mission, this still is true to our mission of getting low-income folk trained and certified and into the workforce. We have now changed our business model so that we are partnering, or we're in the process of establishing partnerships both with high schools, with vocational high schools, and in particular with community colleges to make sure that the target population that we want to continue to serve doesn't get closed out of these employment opportunities because they cannot get through that gateway to community colleges, which is that exam. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. Although I do want to mention this past year we had a really exciting partnership with an organization that does a fabulous job of reentry services. Again, we had, you know, noticing that an increasing proportion of our target population had, they were ex-offenders. And so this organization found us. In fact, we were actually neighbors and never knew either one existed. And they were applying for a Department of Labor grant specifically for job training and job opportunities for ex-offenders. And they were successful at getting the grant. And so that was actually another piece of leverage. They subcontracted to us for some enrollments in our program. They provide all the wraparound services, including the case management, housing, court advocacy, all child care, ongoing workshops, and that was a great benefit to us because we weren't really staffed for the kind of need and wraparound services that people had. So we did not have to spend our time doing those kinds of referrals because our partner was able to do that. And so even though we're exiting the stage for the time being, that was, I think that was a partnership that I think if we could continue, we certainly would because it worked out very well for us. So I think that's kind of it in a nutshell. You did a great job of a summary, Mike, and which I appreciate. And I'd be interested if people have any questions or challenges or want to hear more.
Well, we do
about
have questions,
anything.
And the interesting thing, Paula, and let's track this. You started out as basically philanthropic literacy provider back in the 70s.
That's
80s.
Correct. And our founder, actually, I mean, Gary continued the tradition of our founder for a number of years, actually, before I got here. And, our founder didn't think, he was a tremendous fundraiser, first of all, but he felt that services could be provided to people without public funds, and he was fairly successful at doing that. So I remember those early conversations that you had with Gary about applying for federal funds, and so we took you up on it, and we're glad we did.
I'm amazed when I went in there, and you had no public funds,
and
for those grantees or communities out there, you have a very interesting model in that you were self-sustaining before you applied for the federal funds. And so what happened was, they're out there. Maybe we ought to take advantage because it kind of fits into our mission. Although your mission was literacy and bringing youth into the workforce. And then when you got the funding, you were able to build a more critical mass or build on. You already had a critical mass, but you were able to ramp your operation up so that you could then deliver specific environmental training. Were you delivering life skills at that time? Or
yes. Yes.
So you were doing the whole thing, weren't
we
you?
We were doing the life skills and were one of the sort of persistent advocates to, get some portion of life skills funded through these grants. So at least the job development, I'm happy to be able to observe the job development piece has now been a fundable cost. But it was always every funding cycle a consistent request and urging. To not leave soft skills and life skills out of the equation. So,
and then we watched you develop you farmed out the training, basically partnered with the training. But then we watched you grow, and you went from youth to everyone, to adult and youth, expanding your mission to underserved and disenfranchised populations. So the EPA grant gave you an ability to beef up basically where you were at, it sounded like.
Absolutely, and to also, explore markets that, that would be beneficial to the target population. So, green jobs, was perfect, because we've been talking green jobs before they were green. I mean, the whole point of brownfields is to turn brownfields green. So it was, it took a little bit of persuasion to, Department of Energy-oriented folks who thought they had the corner on green jobs. But the green job star has kind of faded. But Van Jones did come to visit us, and which was very exciting.
I know you were very involved in Green Jobs movement, but the interesting thing is then you got very heavily into these environmental jobs, and also with the EPA, and you had, you know, over a course, almost $1 million over a course of all those grants. But then now, unfortunately, when they only give out 10, 12 grants a year, and we've been fighting from day one to try to expand that, but with 40 contenders or 45, the argument at EPA is we have to let other people come to the trough. And there's a positive and negative. You could argue that both ways. For those who have ramped up and built exemplary programs like yours, these programs aren't self-sustaining, and they say, well, just go and leverage funds. Well, it isn't all that easy to leverage funds, and fortunately, you know, you had an organization, so now they want other people to trough. But what about all the people that spent all this time and effort building their programs? And you built this incredible program and brought on incredible people, and then all of a sudden they kind of, in a way, they made this so difficult for you that they kind of left you there.
Yeah, that's kind of the painful part. But again, I think, you know, our mission, and hopefully, you know, again, when we're looking at sort of doing this at the community college, and I just want to, you know, the community colleges in Massachusetts are kind of their own species. You know, our concern is that if, you know, this is a high-skilled area, but there are lots of low-skilled, unskilled folk, and that's our target population. We want to be sure that they get through the pipeline. So we're still focusing on this, but we're not doing the hard training. And so, you know, like I said, moving away from a community of practitioners that, you know, we have enjoyed working with, and moving away from this kind of programmatic activity it's taken a long time. But we did sort of cut the, we drew the line, and, you know, and said, well, you know, we haven't closed the door completely, but we're just approaching it in a different way. So I think that's just looking at what's, you know, just, I think part of our MO is just always staying ahead of the curve, I guess, if that's kind
of the way
we operate.
Where do you see going forward your funding coming from, or to sustain yourself in this new...
Well, we've kind of moved back to philanthropy and building scale for larger grants. So we're moving back to, we look at the proportion of funding that we've gotten from government. That's certainly shrunk. We don't get any other federal funds at this moment. So it's mainly either from the state, and it's education funds. We're pursuing no job training funds at this point in time. But working on the workforce development pipeline, for which, you know, departments of education provide funding and also private funding. And our partnerships, interestingly enough, generate some fee-for-service income. So that's been an interesting development that we've been working on over the last couple of years. So we can have program income. You know, we don't have on the one hand, we don't have the steadiness of federal money, but we have a little bit more flexibility on what our business over our business model. So
you're going to morph more into the partnership mode and kind of intermediary,
yes,
because of your experience and knowledge that you've built over the last 10 years or 20 years. You can now partner with bigger fish and provide those kind
hopefully
of intermediary.
Provide a niche service, you know, towards a common goal, and that, you know, that's really that's pretty much it.
Anyone have any questions to ask Paula? out there?
Nope, they're all gone.
I think it's fascinating what you do. And this whole idea of where do we go, once we get the money. And it gives us now a 3-year window to think about building our organization and where we're going to go. Can we jump on a money bandwagon? Do we need to morph into another organization? St. Nicholas has morphed into a little different organization, too. They were explaining they're doing a research grant now. They're a little more in the environmental than you are. They're using some of their experience in the environmental to do a research study under a department. I believe it might be a labor or Department of Ed grant, but they're using the experience they gained to change the complexion. But the other thing that's interesting and common amongst all of the programs is you served different disenfranchised populations in the community before you started this program, and you're going to continue.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're
absolutely
continuing the good work, and this environmental program was kind of an opportunity that came along the way, maybe pulled you over to a little different direction for a while, but you've got this sustainable program. There are a few programs that, if you're able to find someone who will sponsor, or you can re-up, you know, you can continue on the environmental path, but it's that whole idea of thinking of what's the next step? What do we do when this ends? How do we continue to serve the community? And it sounds like you're really doing an awesome job in this transition.
Well, thank you, although I have to say we weren't sure for a while. We just kept looking and, you know, thinking, you know, it's like reshuffling the deck. There's got to be different ways to approach this. You have to think ahead, and you have to watch the trends. If it looks like there's, you know, the money starting to shrink, it probably is, and it's probably not going to get better. I mean, these last couple of years, finding the funds to leverage as we had proposed it is really an interesting struggle, and, you know, certainly factored into our, you know, our decision matrix for sure.
Well, it also shows this importance of trying to partner with sustainable organizations, either whether they're established. Now, in your case, you are an established organization. If I were trying to start up an environmental program in Boston, I'd probably want to partner with you because you've been there and you're established and you're sustainable. You know, now probably new grantees, it shows the importance, or prospective grantees, it probably shows the importance of finding a partner like St. Nicholas or like KFY, who have been there for a long time and are in the community, because you've got this reputation where people, I mean, Gary's been, I saw pictures with him and Ted Kennedy, and he's on the Governor's Commission. I mean, you've got a long history, and you're kind of built into the culture of the community when it comes to working with disenfranchised populations and literacy. And so I'm sure the opportunity will pop. You know, it's just a matter of that opportunity coming along.
Right. Keep at it. I mean, this is not an easy, it's not an easy grant to implement. It's not impossible, but, as you write the thing, there are a lot of pieces that need to fit together. It's not an easy funding stream. It really requires you to, you know, to bring something to the table, and to find what it is that you need. I mean, I mentioned this last partnership that we had with the reentry program because it was a perfect fit. They were not looking to start any kind of a job training program, but they had everything else, and we knew that we needed to have, you know, better supports. You know, the EPA grant did not pay for those kinds of soft skills, but we also know that those things are necessary in order for the graduates to be successful. So it was, you know, it's really the kind of partnership. I don't know why we didn't know them before, but it was really a good, good solid partnership, you know, that met both of the needs, and we had a common goal, which was to get folks employed and support them.
Yeah, if you have an EPA job training grant, you tend to be a magnet, and people start to know you're there. So people come out of the woodwork that may have been off the radar screen for a long time because they hear about you.
Yes.
And then those contacts are made.
And they hear about the industry because it's relatively, it's relatively, in Massachusetts we have Quarry, but it's relatively friendly. If you have a criminal record, it's not, you know, not necessarily exclusive in the way that some of the energy efficiency tended to be. So it's always been, you know, it's always been able to provide an entry into an industry and, you know, potentially a viable career path for folks that have that have criminal records. And so that, I think that, you know, we had been sought out by a number of different agencies. This one happened to work the best for us, and that, you know, I'm glad we went out on a, you know, on a positive note, you know, for our last training cycle.
And I think you're onto something here. This whole idea of a filter in community colleges because of the lack of math skills. I think you're really into something. Well, you know, we do try to keep these to 30 minutes, Paul.
Yep.
And,
people
really
are leaving. I hear the beeps.
We really all appreciate your insights and your experience that you've had over these years, and we'll contact you. And if anyone has any questions, we'll put them in the post-session notes. If it's okay, they can contact you or call you or email you with their additional questions.
Yep, terrific. Thank you so much. It's been great.
Thank
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Paula.
Thank
bye-bye.
Thanks
very
much.
Bye-bye.